RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Hakeem Anwar is the founder and CEO of Above Phone Agency, a digital privacy-focused technology supplier that has an array of de-Googled smartphones. And we've invited Hakeem on to RCR to share his thoughts on the surveillance state and tell us about de-Googled devices and the WEF's Own Nothing and Be Happy agenda. Hakeem, welcome to RCR. Thanks for beaming in all the way from the United States. It's great to have you.
Paul, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's clarify one thing. They are spying on us, aren't they? They are?
Well, they say they're not. I believe them. Just kidding. Yeah. They're absolutely spying on us, right? Even people internal to the surveillance apparatus have gone ahead and blown the whistle on them. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, after the Snowden leaks, if you look on the NSA website, they're like, oh, it used to be secret, but no, these programs are now in the open. And they're more than happy to brag about their capabilities and their cooperation with other corporations like AT&T to pull off some of this mass surveillance.
How should we think about this, Hakeem? Because, you know, there's not enough people on the planet to monitor everyone all the time in real time. So how do you think it works?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. I mean, I think that it is possible to ingest the data from everyone in real time. That part is definitely possible. But filtering the data to persons of interest, that is likely all that they can do, or kind of a retroactive investigative approach, or even direct targeting, which I think a flaw within the alternative thinking freedom community, a flaw in their thinking is that they believe just because you use a phone, you could be targeted at any time. But in all honesty, no one is that interesting. No one is that important for them to, for instance, activate a backdoor should it exist in your phone, monitor your communications end to end. You know, they really save that for maybe high level opposition politicians, not for everyday people like you and me. And the reason why taking these steps are so important is because they rely on mass surveillance, these convenient forms of surveillance that you opt into, you consent to by joining a social media network or by using one of the two devices given to you. It's kind of like the Pareto principle. You know, you take care of this 80% of mass surveillance, you've already done the hard work. It's very unlikely that you're going to be targeted by the very high level, elite level of surveillance. So my hope is when enough people start to take care of the mass surveillance, it's going to exhaust their resources and they wouldn't be able to conduct surveillance on everyone.
But if you come on the radar somehow, there's a backup there's a trail, right, that you can look back on, because if all data is saved, it exists somewhere.
Yes. So there is a trail, right? And it depends if you're doing things that are important enough for you to go after them. For instance, Pavel Durov is one good example of this. But I think we have to remind ourselves, like, you know, there's some parallels to Pavel Durov and other tech CEOs, but just to think about his level, Telegram might kind of seem like an alternative app, right? You know, not that big of an operation. It only has 30 employees, but it's used by over a billion people. So that's that's no small feat. They've been around for a really long time. He's a billionaire in himself. So he had to get to that level and then not cooperate the entire way, which was really, really smartly done. He outsmarted the KGB. He outsmarted the FBI along the way, if you listen to his interviews. And he ended up slipping up. So I do think it takes for you to get to a really high level before that starts happening.
I'll put a scenario to you. This is something that happened here and may or may not be anything, but I'm really interested to get your view. Okay, so we came along as an alternative media platform in March 2023. We had a general election to vote in the government, the same government or a new government, in October 2023. In that time, we garnered enough listeners and we attracted a political party that ended up, and we have, without going into it, a mixed member proportional system. So you can vote, all sorts of parties can be voted for, and depending on the number of votes, coalitions can form a majority and become a coalition government. Mm. Now, we can make quite a good argument that we were able to get one of those parties across the threshold of vote to be in our parliament, which is 5% of the vote. They became part of the coalition and were able to assert in their negotiations to form a government, otherwise there would have had to have been another election, certain policies of theirs, which may be uncomfortable for the establishment. Okay, the reason I mention that, would that be tripping a threshold for people like us because we had that effect to be more closely looked at? What do you think?
It's definitely not out of the question. And I think you know, when I'm putting these examples out there, it's just interesting, right? These are all different systems. And so within the New Zealand political system, you guys are absolutely making waves, and they have to wonder, right? Well, why is this one? Why are these representatives having so much influence, and where are these ideas coming from? Where is their support base? And they might see that RCR is a big part of that. So, you know, that wouldn't surprise me. But like, I don't think that's like an international. If you are facing something like that, which we can talk about. I don't think that's like an international effort, right? That's probably your local thugs wasting their time and giving you guys harassment. Whereas, you know, some freedom fighters in the United States, they probably go to it. So there's all these little spats happening within each geographical area, I suppose. But yeah, it's totally plausible what you're saying.
We're also members of Five Eyes, and that's something that was in my mind too, which is a pretty tight group, US, Canada, Australia, UK, and us. All right. What about the cooperation with the big tech platforms? How do you think that works? What is the quid pro quo operating here, do you think?
Yeah, so it's essentially allowing these organizations to balloon to the point where they have a monopoly over different things like communications, distributions of applications, operating systems, and also just being in bed with a lot of law enforcement intelligence agencies at the highest level, to the point where they're a force to be reckoned with, right? I think one of the interesting things you can learn about Google and the research is they have a secret search engine for the CIA, and the CIA wanted to put, you know, the CIA seal on Google, and so they had to go and ask permission from Google. But you know, that should tell you a little something about the dynamics at play. And they need to scratch each other's backs. So Google gets some of the largest military and defense contracts and government contracts. At the same time, now governmental bodies can bypass their constitutions and not spy directly on them. I mean, it's this corporation doing it, but they get to take advantage of Google's geolocation database or any of the many different things that Google's does, or search history and any of their products. So that's kind of how they scratch their back. Google is allowed to be this massive anti-competitive force in exchange for just cooperating with law enforcement whenever they need, and also, you know, a lot of providing their core and critical infrastructure.
And that does it under the NSA's PRISM program, but the companies all deny knowledge of it, don't they?
Yeah, and the representatives of the companies deny knowledge of it. And, you know, I think the representative is probably telling the truth, because it's all they don't have any recollection of it. You have to go much higher up into the company to probably hear about it. So it's in a way they're lying and telling the truth at the same time.
Yeah.
What do they call it? Like on a need to know basis.
Plausible deniability.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Zuckerberg's admission about a month ago, which we have talked about here, how significant was that?
You know, I mean, I think it's significant, but I think the timing of the announcement was very, very peculiar as we're heading into election season. And to me, it just seems politically motivated. To me, it seems like engineered to just incite the fire of the left-right paradigm, whereas, you know, Donald Trump and this entire community were very aware about these issues. Why does Zuckerberg wait so long right before the election to kind of bring it up again? Either he's smelling, he's smelling a shift in regime and he's cozying up to them. But, you know, regardless of whoever is in power, Zuck and the cronies at his level are always going to do the bidding of whatever they need. So maybe it's like a political move, like, hey guys, I'm on your team. I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry for hiding some of these stories that hurt you, but won't happen in the future.
What is the value of data then? I mean, there's obviously value in data for security agencies, but just the market for data, it might be a good idea to understand how big and that is and what it's actually worth.
Yeah, it's a really fun question to ponder. The amount of different devices that are collecting data and the different modalities are just increasing all the time, you know? So it's like the market is changing as this new technology comes out. You can look to the Apple Vision Pro and I think it's something crazy, like 5,000 patents were involved in the technology that they've been working on for a decade. But if you look at some of this technology, they have, MRI, they have like literally magnetic resonance sensors in this technology. And they also have the same tech for those little wireless earbuds, those AirPods. They have patents showing that, you know, they can put the technology in the headphones and in the headsets. Well, the reason behind it is they could literally measure your brain state. And with throwing enough AI at any problem these days, we've obviously seen it solve very advanced problems. But I think the direction we're going is it's not enough to know what you're saying at any point in time and where you are, but we want to know what you think. So it's pushing past the 1984 boundary. Even Orwell could not have predicted this, but yet it's happening. So going back to your question, how do you value data? Well, I think, you know, you can go back to the 80s where predictive analytics was starting to become a thing, and you had a big box store in the United States, a chain called Target. And they were running predictive analytics data based off what their customers were purchasing and just starting to make insights about what types of people would buy certain things. And they got to the point when they could tell where women were pregnant based off the things they bought. And they got so good at it, when they would go to confirm their findings, there was this one case where they found a girl, a younger girl, and she didn't even know she was pregnant yet. But the predicted what she was buying at the store was telling them differently. And wow. So that was a rude awakening to her father when they talked to them.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think I've heard that story before. Yeah, that would have been a shocker. But wanting to know what you're thinking, and that would even be imprecise too, but I guess you could put brain waves into general patterns, et cetera. That is so next level, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a study that I'm not clear on the details, but they were already trying to do this with magnetic resonance imaging. I'm detecting like different getting the person, again, with AI, you throw it at an unsupervised problem, get people to think things, measure their brain waves, and okay, we're finding some patterns here. So, but the good news is, Paul, that no matter what crazy technology these evil villains will come up with, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
That all you have to say is, no, I'm not putting it on. In the case of what I know most about, right, it's the technology in our phone, these abusive software services, that digital ID. These phones are going to be the linchpin to carry out that solution. The QR codes are going to be a very important part of that. Contact tracing, that's the only way they're going to pull that off is with the phone. So either you could say, I don't have a phone. Or you can say, I don't have a phone that supports that. And that's what de-Googled phones are. It says phones that don't have any centralized software services that Google and Apple put out.
Okay, let's get on to that. So that's what you do. What sort of demand is there for now de-Googled, let's call them that, devices? People waking up, are they wanting to know more about or move to these de-Googled devices? Is that what you're finding?
Absolutely. It's been very, very successful for us. And we're just at the starting stages too, right? There's 7 billion people on Earth. Most people have a phone. If you look at trends and developing countries, they're ditching their computers, they're getting phones. So yeah, there's a phone for every person on Earth. And as these programs get crazy and crazier, I mean, we couldn't ask for a better partner. Google and Apple are doing our jobs for us, right? Helping us promote privacy and freedom by locking people's freedoms down. So like a good example of this is, you know, Apple not letting you install apps outside of the Apple Store, which has always been a really, really long thing, or limiting what you can and can't do on the phone. And so as these programs continue to go on and we see, we get recollection of things like Google's location database, where they're able to see where anyone is at any point in time just by drawing a circle in that area of the map. People are now flocking to more private alternatives, and de-Googled phones are one that have become more mature in the past 5 years. It used to be that these things were just kind of toys, right? And you kind of just messed around with them, see what they can do. But I only use de-Googled phones, and I have in our community, which there's thousands of customers, specifically at our company, I would say there's hundreds of thousands of people using de-Googled phones now. But we have 80-year-old grandmas sending encrypted communications and messing around with private cryptocurrency. We have this phone as maybe the first phone a young man would get at 15 or 16 that isn't plugged into all the social media. So yeah, we're seeing a mass response to this, and also a searching for communication systems that aren't under aren't controlled and monitored.
What happens when too many people want those devices and it starts to affect, and maybe it never will, I don't know, the business model of Google, for example? I mean, at some point they'd have to react to this, and it's probably a long way away yet, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, eventually there will be some form of limiting the growth, right? Anything that they have control over, they will do. It's kind of interesting. They haven't outright tried to ban sideloading of apps on non-Google systems. And I guess I could do a better job explaining. So these de-Googled phones, they run the Android open source operating system. It's kind of like the foundation, right? Google has a foundation for the software that runs on your phone. So these alternative developers, they took that foundation and they just built a brand new house without a Google, any of the spying stuff, and more security overall. So because they built this brand new house, it doesn't have Google's certification on it, or they call it like they call it Safety Net, which is the attestation service for Google, which confirms, hey, this is a genuine Google phone. So up till now, Google has done nothing to try and prevent people from installing apps, but they recently allowed for developers to make the choice to prevent their apps from being installed if it wasn't a genuine phone. So that's up to the developer, right? It's kind of the same thing in the United States that the federal government did. Lockdowns and masks, it's up to the states. You guys figure it out. You know, we'll give you a lot of money to do it, and you can choose not to spend that money. But anyways, so I do think they can take some measures, but unfortunately the software is already out there. It's open to the public. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to build an ecosystem of these alternative developers that would never make that choice. So for instance, all of the apps on the above phone are all free and open source. They don't come from the Google Play Store. We're already outside of their control. And I think it's going to make the divide between apps that are part of the Borg, part of the Matrix, and apps that are not part of the Borg, preserve people's freedom and privacy. I think that line is just going to be clear, and people will have the choice to make. Most of us will try and have a foot in both worlds, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, there seems to be an inevitability about some sort of divide. You just brought it up. And, you know, the two sort of go their separate ways, but then they still have to live together too, is the other thing. I hope that's possible. So the phone that you're talking about, the above phone, is that just like a regular kind of phone, any brand, but with the, like you say, the foundation of Android, but then this sort of new house built on it? It's not like you're manufacturing phones, I take it.
No, yeah. So the phone is using existing hardware, ironically enough, Google's hardware, the Google Pixel series, which there's a specific reason the Google developers like the Google Pixel series. There are security updates that it uses. So they've got long update lag times. There's also the hardware security of the phone. What we're interested in is although it's not ideal through Google devices, they are going to be the most operable. Because they are Google devices, you can use them anywhere in the world, New Zealand to Thailand to Nepal, and you put a SIM card in and they just work, right? They have that support for GSM networks and cell networks everywhere. And then things just work. That's kind of the point here. And going back to my point earlier, it's infeasible to think that if this technocratic state to put a target on you, that they would find some way to find you. They would. This phone is not going to protect you from the highest levels of investigations or targeting. This is about the mass surveillance. So when we did our tests on this phone, yes, it's Google hardware, but when we tested the software and we compared it to a normal phone, our team did this ourselves, we saw that there were zero connections to Google, right? And that's really the danger here, because there's been independent studies on a normal phones, and they are sending, every time you turn them out, thousands of connections to Google, thousands of connections to Apple, connections when you plug your SIM card in, when you're changing settings, when you're doing anything, when you're typing in notes on the phone, these things all generate connections versus this operating system called Graphene OS. You're doing all of these things and it's not generating connections. So it's possible to use this phone offline more of the time. A lot of the apps are offline first. You can also use it on Wi-Fi only. So it's kind of opening these doors up, and that's what's important here.
Something that's happening not here, but in Australia. Well, there's two things. I'll mention digital ID first. So it seems that the Australian government is trying to find a way to for an on-ramp for digital IDs. And the way they seem to be doing it is accessing of social media for under 16-year-olds will require a digital identity. And obviously, once you got them young, you got them for life. Now, this is part of a plan, I'm thinking, and interested to hear what you have to say, but to sort of corral everyone into using that device, the phone, because that's where that digital identity will be most exchanged or used, right? The QR codes and the verification of who you are. And that's a kind of way to get the new generations in for life. Am I onto something there, or am I missing something, do you think?
No, I think you're spot on. And they do want to start them young because, the facial structure changes over time. I mean, there could be many, many reasons why they want to start them young, get them into the system and track their face and how it changes over time, just so they can have that data for their facial recognition models. So there's that aspect. And yeah, I mean, it's scary, right? Already in the United States, if you try and sign up to Facebook, you're already submitting your ID for that. So it seems like these things are moving full steam ahead, whether you're in the United States or in Australia. Some things to note is, we're just going to start to see this more and more. And unfortunately, these centralized social platforms, we just need to give those up completely. Right. And that's kind of the goal here in the next few years, is to find viable alternatives. And that's what we've tried to do with Above Phone. We have alternatives, at least for communication, for exchange, for video conferencing. It's harder to find alternatives for social media, but some are beginning to pop up. But on the biometric ID side too, a piece of news that's happening here in the States that was announced this past week is Google Wallet is now letting you convert your passport into a digital ID. Like, they're letting you do it yourself. So there's not one that needs to be generated. So you would just scan the little smart tag in your passport. It's kind of funny. We already have digital ID. It's just, we're not really thinking about it. There is a little chip in your passport that you scan. And what they say is you take a selfie. So, there's also, I know in Texas too, they also did an age verification thing for people who wanted to watch pornography online. They have to be older than 18. So I do see some of those things happening. And it's really worrisome, but in a way it's good too, because if you're a parent and you're aware of these things, then your child's hopefully just not on social media and probably a lot better and brighter and happier for it.
Yeah. And then there's the whole issue of policing social media, mis and disinformation. And again, in Australia, that's working its way through the legislative system. But they seem to be putting the onus on the platforms to police it. And, you know, there are heavy penalties. And I wonder also, you mentioned Telegram, but is X something different from these social media platforms? Are they more reliable? Are they more, given Elon Musk, less susceptible to these sort of backroom deals with security agencies and government establishment? Are they? Can they be trusted more, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I personally don't think so, and the reason is because Twitter still has all the same things going on. They've got these algorithms that are really weird, and with certain topics like, for instance, like Palestine, those will get censored very, very quick. I have friends who are in independent media, and they notice some topics are just scrubbed. Like that. And also, if you just look at Elon and all of his biggest partners are with government defense contracts. So all of his companies, that's kind of where it's been. So I wouldn't think of him as an outsider hero. An outsider hero wouldn't be taking money from the government. It's just he's a false prophet. And those are my personal beliefs. But again, never put all your cards in someone else's court. This is going to take a lot of different people standing up, community networks. And that's what I think we're going to see in the future is probably servers at the local level for things like social media and connecting with like-minded people. If we had video right now, I would show you some of the things on the phone. But you know, these are already technologies that exist where you can create a local map of perhaps maybe food in your area or different people who are cultivating the land or having something to share and to sell. And you can use different communication networks like XMPP, which that is a communications protocol that's over 20 years old. Google Hangouts used to be built on top of it. WhatsApp used to be built on top of it. But they never told you the underlying free open source technology because they wanted to kind of build their own things on top of it. But this technology is still here. It still exists. It's free. It's decentralized and anyone can use it. So I think until enough people move off of these big platforms and all to free decentralized networks, we're kind of going to be locked into that. So I would encourage you guys to check that out. You can learn more about what I'm talking about at abovephone.com. And then we also do provide software services for the phone, right? It's not just the phone alone, but you're going to need a private way to email, to set up a calendar, to do video conferencing, to protect your internet with a VPN, and to search online. And so we have private ways to do all of these different things. So we think you'll learn a lot if you're interested in privacy and security from it.
It's interesting what you said about local. That, and we were talking about, you know, the division of some sort going on, and that seems to be where it is. It's going local and keeping things very local, food supply, communications, you know, relationships versus, I don't know, going global. And then that brings in, you know, some of these sort of global control kind of entities like the WEF, who seem to be wanting to impose some sort of, you know, vanilla version of humanity across the entire globe. So it's local versus that really in the end, isn't it?
100%. And it's a natural like waveform of consciousness, I think, right? I think we're reaching the peak of isolation where you think that these social networks are life itself, getting all these likes and views and our posts and comments, but really having little substance, little depth in our relationships, little love. I think we're starting to break out of that. And I do think, I mean, none of these tech companies, I think this is important to mention, none of these tech companies are making money. Like a lot of them are struggling to be profitable. They kind of make it seem like you can't shake them, but there's massive layoffs happening right now in Microsoft and Google and Facebook, all the big tech companies, you name them, there's some layoffs. So I do think we're starting to see these things shatter. And when it comes to staying local, yes, pulling our resources and attention outside of the big companies and putting them locally is going to be key. And that's why we've done, you know, we've done partnerships in New Zealand before. We were working with People's Health Alliance New Zealand, which is a local upstart group that is doing things like meeting up, talking about holistic health, doing farmers markets. And that's what it's all about. And that's what our hope is with the phone, is the phone is a tool to connect you to people locally so you can communicate completely privately so that no one can come into your phone, see what you were doing, see what you were saying, whatever you're exchanging. That is completely that is your sacred knowledge. That is your sacred data, and no one can take that away from you. So we hope that that'll be the transformative way people can use technology instead of just being sucked in on social media.
I'm just thinking, you know, wasn't Google's positioning strapline when they launched "Do No Evil"? Was that it? I mean, how did that turn out, do you think, Hakeem?
Oh, man. You know what? It's been pretty evil most of the time, but they did pull out of one project, which was kind of nice of them. It was the Pentagon's Project Maven, where they were detecting people moving objects and animals and people with drones. So Google was like, nope, that one's too evil for me, even too evil for us. So they backed out. Palantir took that project on.
And Palantir is Peter Thiel, right?
Palantir is Peter Thiel, funded by Inkytel, CIA venture capitalist arm, involved in some of the biggest contracts like Tiberius in the United States, which was the way they intelligently knew how to distribute vaccines based on circumventing HIPAA requirements for medical sensitive medical data that was all being sucked in this system they built called Tiberius. They also worked on these predictive policing programs in cities like New Orleans. I might be mixing the names up. Tiberius may have not been the name for that, but they did do these programs, and they did it without anyone in the city's knowledge by making it like a nonprofit program where they were scraping social media and using that data in New Orleans to predict when the next gang event would be, who is an all in a gang, who their associates are. So yeah, there's sinister stuff at play here for sure.
He's a New Zealand citizen, by the way.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, he has citizenship here. It only took him a week, apparently, back in the day. I think I'm right about that. So that's an interesting little intersection in all of this.
Hey, when you got money.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, usually it takes a lot longer than a week to get citizenship. Hakeem Anwar, it's been really fascinating speaking with you. If people want to know more about the Above Phone Agency, maybe want to get in touch, have any questions. I know you mentioned a web address before. Perhaps you can mention it again and any other thing that is relevant to that.
Absolutely. If you'd like to learn about anything we're doing with the phone and our company, please go to abovephone.com. We've got private phones, private laptops, and also communication services. There's a little chat window on the bottom right-hand corner. We have people live on there. We ship to New Zealand. We ship to Australia. In fact, it's one of our major customer groups, so that's pretty interesting. And I've got, for all you listeners out there, I've got a discount code, RCR25, for $25 off anything in the store. My personal blog, where it's kind of, I teach people about friendly software, and we talk about abusive software and just different solutions. You can follow me at takebackourtech.org, and that's takebackourtech on any social platform, Telegram, Twitter, even TikTok. So thanks again for having me on.
Yeah. And that you've been listening to Hakeem Anwar, who is founder and CEO of Above Phone Agency. Yeah, we appreciate the chat, Hakeem. Thanks for coming on.
Take care, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.